Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of the Perfect Bracket College Basketball Podcast. The season's right around the corner, and especially as we get closer to the season, actually in the middle of the season of the podcast, we'll start covering a more analysis of teams and how the teams are performing and that nature. But of course, I'm not going to avoid some of the bigger picture tournament analysis that we can use to eventually as we fill out our brackets come March. So today there are kind of two things that I wanted to touch on. The first is I did some analysis to see how 1 and 2 seeds have performed in the NCAA tournament if they have a KenPom ranking of greater than 10. So basically I'm looking to see how the 1 and 2 seeds have performed in the NCAA tournament that are kind of aren't ranked as well in KenPom, because if you're a 1 or 2 seed, you would expect, you know, by that measure, you should be a top 8 team, and theoretically we think would be ranked top 8 in KenPom, or at least top 10. But not every team is like that, so that might be an indicator that, hey, these are kind of weak 1 to 2 seeds. And I wanted to see how much significance or any that factor would have in predicting how these teams are doing the NCAA tournament. And the other thing I wanted to touch on was kind of the first 4 games and how we can use, like, look at the first 4 teams, the teams that win those first 4 games and actually make it to the round of 64, and how we can predict which one of those teams will do well. Because every year going back to 2011, there's been at least one first 4 team to win a round of 64 game and advance to the round of 32. Overall, actually, among the 16 games played by first 4 winners in the round of 64, overall, the records are 8-8. So each year, one team is one. And I've always had a really hard time picking which one of those teams it would be. One year, actually, back in 2013, I correctly picked LaSalle to beat Kansas State in the first round. I believe LaSalle was a 13 seed. But the last few years, it's been tough for me. Like in 2017, I really loved the SMU team, and USC upset them. I was really perplexed by that. Even in this past year, it was kind of tough. I really liked TCU, and I didn't pick any first 4 winners to advance to the round of 32. And I knew going in that every year a first 4 team is one, but I wasn't sure how much that stat was actually significant, whether it was just kind of a random, somewhat random, and that's just how it had played out. But I didn't really know if that was really a predictive measure, and it may still not be. So I wanted to look in to see if there's any analysis we could use to try to figure out which one of those first 4 teams actually would advance to the round of 64. Okay, here we go. Okay, so we're going to start out looking at the 1 and 2 seeds that have had a KenPom ranking of greater than 10. So just to kind of clarify, the way these KenPom rankings work is they do change over the course of the season, and the KenPom rankings I'm using are based on the KenPom rankings that the teams had at the end of the season. So, like, the initial question that I think is worth asking is, so let's say, you know, again, I'm looking at teams that 1 and 2 seeds that are great, have greater than 10 KenPom rankings. So I could say, well, okay, let's say my conclusion from this analysis was that, oh man, team 1 and 2 seeds that had KenPom ranking is greater than 10 didn't perform well in the NCAA tournament. Well, the natural question could be, well, of course they didn't perform well, because that's the case, because when they didn't perform well, they fell in the KenPom rankings as a result, because the rankings still take tournament games into account. You could say, okay, like, the teams didn't perform well in the tournament, so then of course those teams fell out of the KenPom top 10. So you could say, like, that's not really telling you much. And the thing is, you can go back and look at what the KenPom rankings were heading into the season. But it's just a little harder to, the data is much easier presented when you look at the KenPom rankings at the end of the season. So it just was kind of more work than it's worth. And just also as an example, it doesn't really hurt the analysis, because the thing is, even if a team loses in the NCAA tournament, it doesn't really, or even wins, it usually does not change their KenPom ranking that much, because the KenPom ranking is taking the whole season into account. So for example, like last season, Kansas was the 9th ranked KenPom team before the tournament, And then after making the Final Four, they were still the ninth ranked team. Virginia, who was number one, the KenPom team before the tournament, even after the loss to UMBC, which you would think would really just like kill them, maybe in like a KenPom ranking, they only fell one spot by the end of the tournament, and they fell down to two. And a lot of that probably also had to do with Villanova just being as amazing as they were in the tournament. Xavier was number 14 heading into the tournament, and they lost in the round of 32. Again, not a good performance, but only fell one spot to 15 by the final rankings. As a last example, in 2016, Oklahoma made a Final Four as a two seed and actually fell two spots in the overall KenPom rankings. One like kind of different example, though. So if you're a 1-2 seed, you're likely to already be kind of a somewhat high KenPom team, so your tournament performance is less likely to significantly impact the ranking. Just because if you do well in the tournament, well, you're kind of doing what the ranking was expected of you. And even if you don't do well, it's only a one-game sample size. So that one-game sample size, even if you're a team like Virginia that loses, isn't really going to throw off your ranking that much. And if you're a if you're a lower KenPom ranking team, a good tourney run could have more of an impact, because if you lose your first round tournament game as a lower ranked KenPom team, it's only a one-game sample size. But if you do really well and advance far in the tournament, let's say like a 7 seed gets to the Final Four, you could affect your ranking quite a bit, because again, there's like a larger sample and you're performing much better than the rankings would have indicated. So for example, like Loyola, who was, I believe, a 6 seed, they made their Final Four run, and so they would be, so they're kind of like the peak example of when you would expect a team to really have a change in KenPom slots. And they rose from 41st in KenPom coming into the tournament to 31st. So a team like that really can have a big ranking impact. But again, in this analysis, we're focusing on the 1-2 seeds and seeing how they performed. And as I kind of indicated and I looked into it, there's not really any example, and I really looked where I could find, of a team that started, let's say they started the tournament 8th ranked in KenPom, and then they lost, and fell to like, say, even like 11th in KenPom. So like in that example, that would be a team that kind of aided my analysis, but it was kind of not actually a team I would be wanting to use, because again, it would have been a team that was in the top 10, then lost, then fell out of the top 10. So if I were to use that team and say, look, the teams that are outside the top 10 in KenPom lose and don't do well in the tournament, that would not really be a good way to do my analysis. But again, that is not what I found. So I feel confident that this analysis is actually has been done in a legitimate way. Okay, so now I'm actually going to get into it. So big precursor. Okay, so here's what I actually found. So again, looking at 1-2 seeds that had KenPom rankings of greater than 10. So among 1 seeds, so again, I went back all the way to 2002. That's as far back as KenPom's rankings go. So going back to 2002, in total there were 4 1 seeds that had a KenPom ranking of greater than 10. Not a huge sample, but among those teams, 2 only advanced to the round of 32. One advanced to the Elite Eight, and one advanced to the Sweet 16. So again, of Act 1 seeds, you would expect them to do well, but 50% of the sample lost in the round of 32, and 75% didn't even get past the Sweet 16. So again, small sample, but that's kind of supports my hypothesis that these teams maybe don't do well in the tournament, that are 1 or 2 seeds that have KenPom ranking greater than 10. So now let's see what happens with the 2 seeds. The 2 seeds, there was a much bigger sample, which you might expect. So in total, there's a sample of 14, 18, 20 teams. So among the 20 teams, again, 2 seeds, even if they didn't have a great KenPom ranking, you might still expect them to do well. They're 2 seed and their ranking would still be high and they'd have a favorable tournament draw. So among the 20 teams, 11 of them lost in the round of 32, 55%, which is very high, especially for 2 seeds. 3 lost in the Sweet 16, 4 made it to the Elite Eight, 20% of the sample, and 2 actually lost in the first round. So if you want to, so you can say, so like you can kind of look at the data however you want. 65% of the sample didn't even make it past the round of 32. 80% of the sample didn't make it past the Sweet 16 among two seeds. So again, this really supports the idea that if you're a one or two seed, particularly a two seed, that coming into the tournament as a KenPom ranking greater than 10, I don't think we should expect a great performance on average from these teams. And again, obviously, like again, the KenPom ranking changes after tournament play, but as we discussed, it doesn't change very much. So I still feel confident in saying that going into the tournament, if the KenPom ranking is greater than 10, then this evidence indicates that the teams are less likely to do well in the tournament. Again, and this is not even just like edging out barely. All these teams like counted well. 70% of the teams didn't make it past the Sweet 16. Or 80%, excuse me. 65% didn't make it past the round of 32 among two seeds. So yeah, it was interesting to me for sure. And something I was definitely going to keep an eye on. Every year, like, there's not even guaranteed every year to be a one or two seed that is outside the top 10. But usually there's at least one. Like, in 2018, it was Xavier, who kind of people liked. I liked them, but I knew that the KenPom, they weren't a very good analytics team. And I didn't pick them to lose in the round of 32. But sure enough, they did lose there. And, yeah, so it's something I'm definitely going to keep in mind this year. So now we're going to move on to the first four teams. So as I mentioned earlier, I've really struggled picking which first four winners would win a game, if at all, in the NCAA tournament. Something I've really struggled with, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, okay, is there any analysis I can do to try to see if I can get a predictive edge here? And for a while, I just couldn't really figure it out. I was just kind of like, these games, I mean, you can use every typical analysis you would use just to evaluate any game, but I was couldn't really think about how I could evaluate these games in a unique way. But I did think that maybe there needed to be kind of a unique evaluation, because these games are not really normal in the sense that the first four winners have played like 2 days before. So they are coming into the round of 64 having played a game. So it just is a different... There's a different ingredient to these games, and then that makes them different than the others. So I thought maybe there could be a unique analysis that could be used. So anyway, what I ended up kind of stumbling on is the idea that I could look at how, I mean, and again, in a sense, this is just fairly obvious, but I could thought, okay, well, why don't I just look at how the teams perform in their first four games? And then use that to try to predict how they'd perform in the tournament, in the actual round of 64. That seems obvious, but initially, like, every team that makes it to the round of 64 has won their first four games. So just the fact that they won is not enough to indicate that they're going to win their round of 64 game. Although you could say that the fact that every year there's been at least one first four winner to advance to the round of 32, that the fact that they won kind of has given them a little bit of momentum and has made them more likely to pull the upset, which is definitely a factor, but it doesn't help. And it is helpful if that's the case to know that, okay, at least there's going to be one first four winner to win a round of 64 game, but that wouldn't help me really determine which team it's going to be. So what I decided to do is I decided to go back and look at the spreads of every first four game going back to 2011. And then I looked, seeing what the team was favored by or an underdog by in the first four game. And then I looked at how much did each team beat the spread by. So if a team, so like last year, St. Bonaventure beat, I believe, Arizona State, or was it Syracuse? Anyway, so St. Bonaventure takes on their first four opponent. St. Bonaventure took on UCLA. That's what it is. So St. Bonaventure, for example, was a 3-point underdog to UCLA. And then they ended up winning by 7. So that means, so in that case, St. Bonaventure beat the spread by 10 points. In the other example, Syracuse took on Arizona State, and they were 1.5 point underdogs, and they ended up winning by 4. So they beat the spread by 5.5. So I did this for every one of the games. And then I looked at, and I had my hypothesis was, okay, maybe the teams that beat the spread in their first four game by the most points have a better chance to win their round of 64 game. Because they didn't only like perform to expectations, they performed above what they were expected to do. And I thought, as much as like Vegas could take that into account in the actual game, and you could use that, could be set in the odds a little bit, I thought that could be a predictive factor, that these teams really outperformed expectations in that first four games, so that would make them a better candidate to pull an upset in the round of 64. So to go through kind of some findings, so again, teams in the round of 64 that won their first four games are 8-8, were 8-8 overall. And if in the first four, the winner beat the spread by greater than or equal to 10 points, they were 6-4 in their round of 64 game. If they beat the spread by greater than 10 points, again, the first one was greater than or equal to 10. In this case, if you beat the spread by greater than 10 points, teams were 6-2 in the round of 64, the first four teams were. If they beat the spread in the first four by greater than 15 points, the teams had a 3-1 record in the round of 64. If they beat the spread by less than 10 points, they had a 2-4 record. If they beat the spread by less than or equal to 10, they had a 2-6 record. So again, that's a lot fast, but it does suggest that if these teams, the more these teams beat the spread by and outperform their first four game, the better chance they have to win their round of 64 game. Again, just going through a few of them. For the teams that beat the spread in the first four by greater than 10 points, they had a 6-2 record in the round of 64. That's a strong indicator. And that tells me something. Not going to pick every game, but I feel like that's something that I should use to kind of give me a little bit of edge in this complicated puzzle of picking these first four games. But then, of course, I figured, I shouldn't only look at how the teams are overperforming in the first four game. I should look at who they're matching up against in the round of 64 and to what extent they are an underdog or in rare cases a favorite in their actual round of 64 game. And that didn't tell me quite as much. So I assumed like if the spread is close in the round of 64 game, maybe, you know, that would give them a better chance to win. But in those games, when the spread was less than or equal to 5, indicating a close game, the first four winners had a record of only 5-5. There were two cases in which first four team winners were actually favored in the first round, and in those cases they were 2-0, so they were actual favorites and they won, which you would, I guess, expect. But it's good to know and a reason to check the spreads for those games. When the KenPom differential in terms of the rankings of those teams going into the game were greater than or equal to 40, the team had a 1-2. The first four winners had a 1-2 record. So again, it suggests that fairly obvious, but if that one of the teams has a much better KenPom ranking, that would be something to take into account. And when the KenPom differential is greater than or equal to 20, the teams had a 3-4 record. Interesting factoid, you know, VCU is the kind of infamous first four winner that actually had a run to a Final Four. And I tried to figure out, just like, this was another factor of analysis that didn't really get me anywhere, but I wanted to see how teams performed in the regular season with one day off. And I figured, okay, maybe the teams that have performed really well after one day off have a better chance of being doing well as after winning a first four game. So like VCU in their regular season, when they had their Final Four run, was 6-0 with one day off. So in my mind, oh, maybe that gave them an advantage after winning their first four game because they played well after having one day off. And I looked at that for every one of these teams, but I couldn't really come up with anything, any strong indicator. Nothing really came out of it. Yeah, like some teams didn't perform well at all with one day off after having just one day off in the regular season, and they performed well in the same scenario in the tournament. So I didn't get too much from that. But anyway, kind of the takeaway here is that the bigger teams outperform the spread in their first four game, the better chance they have to win their round of 64 game. It's not a huge indicator, but
I think there is something to it, and I'm definitely going to take it into account moving forward. So that's the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm excited for the season, and hopefully I'll be coming out with more of these. Okay, take care.